Republicans to wake up. The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to. Do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Thanks for checking out the latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. Today, we catch up with Rocky Anderson, former mayor of Salt Lake City, the guy I voted for president in 2012 when he led the Justice Party ticket. And Rocky Anderson has just filed suit against the NSA, former President Bush and his crony Dick Cheney, for massive surveillance of Utah and its visitors during the Winter Olympics in 2002. And Rocky Anderson has a very interesting lawsuit pending here that could not only expose the wrongdoing of the past, but lead to an injunction to prevent continuing surveillance of Americans in violation of the Fourth Amendment and statutes. Every day I like to thank the people who support my work at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions, including Deborah Kennedy, Mark Brodsky, Jeffrey Lipinski, and Faith Peoples, who's got more than one subscription. I invite you to join them. Come on over to my website, peterbcollins.com. Click on the sign-up link under my picture. You can choose a subscription of $5, $10, $20 a month, or our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. New annual subscribers get a bonus gift, the ebook edition of Pepe Escobar's latest collection of columns called Empire of Chaos. Former Salt Lake City Mayor Rocky Anderson returns to the Peter B. Collins Podcast today. He's filed a class action suit against the NSA and others related to the surveillance of just about everybody around the Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City in 2002. This is one of two important lawsuits recently filed challenging unconstitutional surveillance. Rocky Anderson ran for president in 2012 under the Justice Party banner, and he earned my vote by championing a return to constitutional rule in these United States. Now a practicing attorney in Salt Lake City, he is spearheading a class action lawsuit against the NSA, former President Bush, and Vice President Cheney over the spying on people who attended and participated or who were just present in Salt Lake City during the Winter Games in 2002. Rocky, thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Peter, and I appreciate you helping us get out the word because, as I often say, if people aren't aware, we're never going to change things. And after awareness comes action, and we're all going to have to join forces as we, the people, to save our constitutional republic.
Now, Rocky, let's just, before we get into the details of this lawsuit, do a quick media check. I picked up the story about your lawsuit from Fox 13 in Salt Lake City. Has there been any national coverage, and in particular, has Rachel Maddow or her producers called yet to get your comment on this lawsuit?
No, I really haven't heard from anybody nationally. I first read about this actually in a breaking story in the Wall Street Journal 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But since we filed the lawsuit, there's been some coverage by, for instance, RT Television and Sputnik News in Russia. But strangely enough, even though I called one of the reporters that's done a lot of the work on these issues at the New York Times, there really hasn't been any attention paid to it. And I find that quite bizarre, given the fact that this is the first, and I believe the only, case so far where there is good evidence that the NSA and the FBI joined together, and this was in the context of Bush's widespread illegal surveillance program, but where they identified a geographic area, basically placed a surveillance cone over that area, and scooped up the contents of everything they could. Mm-hmm. They got the contents of every email, of every text message in this area, and they also got all the metadata from every telephone call and from the source that we have who was in the NSA at the time. They also identified certain people or telephone numbers and recorded those telephone conversations. And it wasn't only in Salt Lake City now, we've recently learned. It was in the area of every Olympic venue.
Really?
So this was the most immense, indiscriminate surveillance by identifying a geographical area and without, of course, any particularized showing of suspicion, of course, without any warrant, and just coming in completely illegally and unconstitutionally and grabbing everything they could get from everyone in this area. And it wasn't just those who were in this area that was impacted. It was everybody from outside the area who engaged in any communications with people within this area. So it's very likely that they spied on the contents of communications of millions of people during the 2002 Winter Olympic Games.
Now, Rocky, I can almost hear Bush in that weird voice of his saying, well, we're doing it to keep you safe. You know, the Olympics are a target for international terrorism. I don't have to tell you about Munich. That's a pretty weak impersonation. But, they make this case that there were threats, and therefore they had to take every precaution to make sure that there was no terrorist event. But your point that you made just a moment ago is really critical. They could have easily taken out a warrant and said they could even publicly have disclosed this because obviously people knew there was heightened security around the Olympics, but they probably didn't want to tip their hands about, you know, dirt boxes and stingrays and these other high-tech devices that enable the kind of cone of surveillance that you described. But fundamentally, I would make the case that they easily could have gotten a warrant, even from the super-secret FISA court.
Well, I doubt they could have gotten a warrant to tap into your and my conversations, your and my emails.
Mm-hmm.
There could have been no particularized showing. And that's required. You cannot get a warrant and say, spy on everybody in this area. And there was no justification for that after 9/11. It's so completely out of perspective, completely out of whack to say that because 9/11 attacks happened, that we just rip up our Constitution and laws passed by Congress, and particularly the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which was passed. And it's really interesting, the history of that act. Congress held hearings during and after the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And the Church Committee and the Senate, the Pike Commission and the House of Representatives, even the Rockefeller Commission that Ford put in place. And they did a thorough investigation of unconstitutional and illegal acts by our intelligence community. They shined a bright light on what they found, letting the American people know the abuses that had happened, which one would expect is essential in anything that deserves the name of a democracy. And then they said, okay, now, besides shining a light on this and holding people accountable, at least historically, for these abuses, we're going to pass legislation that will protect us from this ever happening again. And it was then, in 1978, that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act was passed, mm-hmm. which said you may not spy on the communications of people in this country without first getting a warrant. And they set up procedures that made that possible, even in a secret court. Well, now, you roll forward to the Bush administration. It wasn't the threat of nuclear annihilation like we were facing during the Cold War. It was attacks during one day on this country that these folks used to justify basically shredding the Fourth Amendment, basically disregarding the fundamental right of privacy of the people of this country, and even more fundamentally saying the rule of law doesn't mean anything. We're just going to let the executive do whatever he wants, regardless of what Congress has said.
And Rocky,
my response to these folks in Congress has said, well, this was right after 9/11. We're going to give the NSA a pass on this. Then why didn't Congress act? Because it was Congress's laws that were being violated as well as the Constitution.
And Rocky, there's no subordinate clause, either in the Fourth Amendment or, you know, adjacent to the Bill of Rights, that says that these are optional at the, you know, whim of the executive branch, or that under exigent circumstances that the Bill of Rights can be waived or shredded. And yet that's how very many people approach this. That, oh, these were unusual times, we were afraid of another attack, and we had to take every step possible. But in other respects, we can see that the surveillance of the 2002 Olympics were really just a warm-up for the what's euphemistically called warrantless wiretapping that occurred from that point up until the 2008 FISA reform bill that Obama opposed as a senator. And then once he got the nomination, he voted for it in August of 2008. And so we see that people seem to treat the Bill of Rights as a matter of convenience or something that can be waived under certain circumstances. And that flatly isn't true.
And, Peter, I think it's so important for people to understand how egregious those amendments in 2008 really were, the amendments that you just referred to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It was so bad, this bill, and you read it. It is the most incredible piece of legislation, granting retroactive immunity for federal felonies committed by certain telecommunications companies. Retroactive immunity for criminal violations. Who else gets that treatment from Congress except an industry that gives these enormous campaign contributions? And President Obama said, as a senator, that he would join a filibuster against that bill. It was that bad. And then he gets the nomination, as you indicated, and he voted for that retroactive immunity for telecommunications companies. And that bill is still getting in our way of holding those telecommunication companies accountable for what they did to the people, to their most fundamental constitutional privacy rights, when they joined up without any warrants, without any coercion, really. They just joined up as partners with the NSA and the FBI to turn over all this information. And now we learned from the New York Times a couple of Sundays ago that AT&T has just handed off $1 billion emails a day.
And Rocky, we also learned from that New York Times article that the AT&T relationship with the NSA goes back as far as 1985. And when we talk about Obama's flip on the 2008 FISA reform vote, I'll note that just 3 weeks later, I attended the Democratic Convention, the coronation of candidate Obama in Denver, and came away with a souvenir tote bag with AT&T all over it. The credentials that we were assigned all had AT&T's logo. There was a big party on the first night of the convention that the media were not invited to, hosted by AT&T. So they have greased both political parties, and they have, you know, as the Times article reported, the NSA cautioned its representatives to be nice to AT&T because they're our partner in this. That's how it was described.
Yeah, they said it's not a matter of a contractual relationship. They're our partners, so be nice to them. Isn't that one of the most despicable things imaginable? This company that is abusing its customers and turning over our emails, billions of them a day, to the NSA. But what may be even more, I mean, this just boggles the mind. What was also disclosed in that New York Times article is the secret FISA court, where there's no accountability, there's no due process, there's no right of appeals. There's really no way for the people in this country to know what the secret court is up to. They authorized basically the bugging of the United Nations. So all these countries send their diplomats over. And they expect us to join with them in good faith and live up to the high ideals of the United Nations. And through AT&T, the NSA and the FBI are bugging them all.
So, Rocky, let's talk about this class action lawsuit. You have named the former president, Vice President Bush and Cheney, as respondents. You filed this in U.S. District Court, and your plaintiffs include the former vice chair of the Utah Democratic Party, Josie Valdez, a Republican state senator, Howard Stevenson, your former spokeswoman and a Salt Lake City councilwoman, Dita Seed, former saloon owner, Daniel Darger, and an author named William Bagley, plus a University of Utah professor, Thomas Huckin. Are you able to offer any proof that these individuals were, in fact, surveilled? This is a critical issue because the courts have continued to deflect these suits where, and I'm thinking of the case out of Detroit that the ACLU brought, that Judge Anna Diggs Taylor presided over, and she seemed to want very much to rule in favor of the plaintiffs, but the government kept saying, well, look, they can't prove that they were harmed because they can't prove that they were actually eavesdropped on or had data collected.
Well, she did rule in their favor, and then the Court of Appeals in a 2-1 decision said, no, because they can't prove that their communications were subjected to the surveillance, they don't have standing. And do you know why they couldn't prove it? Why they couldn't get that information? Because of the invocation by the Obama administration of this perverse state secrets doctrine, a court-created doctrine that allows the executive branch, when the executive branch is under fire for breaking the law, they themselves are allowed to tell the courts what evidence is going to come in and what evidence isn't, and even at some times whether cases can proceed on their merit. So you get torture victims coming in to our courts and seeking justice, thinking that we mean it as a nation, that we have separation of powers, and that if members of the executive branch have broken the law, then we go to the courts to hold them accountable. That's how it's supposed to work. But the Obama administration invokes the state secrets doctrine, and those cases are thrown out.
And do you expect that to happen in your case?
No, because in our case, the practice was to pick up everything from everybody in this area. And so I think that the burden ought to shift to the government to demonstrate that, in fact, these communications were not subjected to the surveillance. And I think, truly, the application of the state secrets doctrine in these cases is a complete perversion of why the doctrine was set up in the first place. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to protect national secrets, the disclosure of which would be inimical to our nation's security. It's not supposed to just be a tool for the executive branch to protect itself against disclosure of its own criminal acts. And so to disclose that an email between Peter Collins and Rocky Anderson, when Rocky Anderson was in Salt Lake City, was subjected to surveillance, all that's going to do is establish that the executive branch was breaking the law, mm-hmm. was violating the Constitution. There's no national security concern unless everything is national security, and that's the way the Obama and the Bush administration have approached the matter. But I think that courts really need to stand up and assume their constitutional role in our system of checks and balances, or it's all over. We don't have the rule of law. We don't have a constitution that goes beyond being simply a piece of parchment. And we certainly don't have a system of checks and balances if we're not able to challenge this kind of illegal conduct.
Well, Rocky, I certainly, for one, truly welcome this legal action on your part. And while the cases are certainly quite different, I think there's also an interesting filing that occurred in Washington last week in the District Court for the District of Columbia, where NSA whistleblowers Tom Drake, Diane Rourke, Ed Loomis, Kirk Wiebe, and Bill Binney filed suit against the former directors of the NSA, Keith Alexander and Michael Hayden, and also the agency itself and the FBI, and there are other plaintiffs named, including former FBI Director Mueller. And they are suing over the retaliation that they faced when they blew the whistle on contractor fraud inside the NSA. And as you know, Tom Drake faced a really heavy case under the Espionage Act, and all of these individuals were subjected to unnecessary and unwarranted home raids and being held for some period of time. And so I really welcome these suits that challenge the unconstitutional and flatly illegal behavior of government agencies that has occurred under the fog of the so-called war on terrorism and these egregious constitutional violations that these lawsuits are hopefully going to bring to light.
Yeah, I think these whistleblowers are our nation's modern-day heroes. They truly are. They're the ones that, for we the people, they're trying to let us know what our government is up to. And in those cases, it wasn't just illegal misconduct. It was unbelievable waste of resources that they were trying to let us and Congress know about. And instead, they end up losing their jobs. They were prosecuted. In Tom Drake's case, he ended up going from being a high-level NSA employee to working in an Apple store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also the retaliation that they faced was used to set an example for other whistleblowers. And it is to his credit that Ed Snowden, who knew what happened to these people, was basically pushed over the edge when he saw James Clapper perjure himself before the United States Senate when asked if we were collecting, you know, data on millions of Americans by Senator Ron Wyden. And so I really think that we need to cherish and protect these whistleblowers, and we also need to bring to justice the rogue individuals, some of whom have perjured themselves as well, but who also have grossly violated their oaths of office to defend the Constitution, not the executive branch or the president who's in office, or even, you know, this idea of protecting us from a terrorist attack. They didn't pledge to do that. That's not what the oath of office says.
That's exactly right. And it's so bizarre that you can hear this Orwellian kind of claim from the White House that this is going to be the most open and accessible government and how important openness is for democracy. And then they go after more whistleblowers in one administration than in the history of this country, more espionage prosecutions, and they go after the messengers to we the people, letting us know what our government's up to, and not prosecuting those whose criminal acts are disclosed by these messengers. And let's not forget Chelsea Manning and what she has gone through. Used to be Bradley Manning. What she has gone through and the years now that she is facing in a federal penitentiary, now they're trying to put her in solitary confinement.
For having an expired tube of toothpaste.
Yeah, isn't that?
And who would have given
mind-blowing.
Her who would have given her that tube of toothpaste? It only would have been available either through the commissary or through distribution by the prison.
Yeah, it's the way they treated her even before her trial.
Mm-hmm. But, sure, at Quantico.
You know, we can't forget about these heroes that have gone the distance for us. They did it so that we would know. We wouldn't have known about the war crime committed by those who were shooting from their helicopters mm-hmm. and killing innocent civilians, unarmed civilians, in Baghdad without Chelsea Manning disclosing it. We saw the video film
right.
that disclosed it. Well, you know, to this day, those war criminals, those murderers, have not been brought to justice, and yet Chelsea Manning is facing decades in a federal penitentiary.
And Rocky, just one more bite from the whistleblowers lawsuit, the NSA folks. One of the issues that they raise is that they were falsely accused of being leakers for the book that Risen wrote and the articles that he and Eric Lichtblau wrote for the New York Times in late 2005. And Risen has taken the unusual step, breaking from his own practices of total confidentiality, to specifically deny that he ever talked to any of these plaintiffs about the leaked information. So right. this I think, is a very powerful suit. And I hope that in combination with yours, we're going to see the courts forced to confront these issues that they have allowed the government to duck with, as you say, the state secrets privilege and other dodges that unfortunately have been successful to date.
Well, I will challenge the invocation of state secrets with all my being, everything that I've got. I've studied that state secrets doctrine. There are two full-length books on the Reynolds versus United States case alone, and that was the case out of which this very strange democracy-destroying doctrine was derived.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the case out of which it was derived, it turns out the government was lying to the courts
wow.
in that case. That was disclosed by the declassification of those documents many years later. So, but again, Peter, and I'm so glad that you're covering this and letting your listeners know about what's going on, because if we're not aware this is happening, and then if we don't all stand together in opposition to it and let people who are in power know that we're the ones that they have to account to, we're going to insist upon it, then we are just paving the road toward greater totalitarianism and a destruction of our constitutional republic. And I say that without exaggeration. I know it sounds really like it may be overblown a bit.
Not to me.
If we're going to let our government do the kinds of things that the church committee said would never again be allowed, there is no stopping the executive branch.
And Rocky, I want to note that your suit not only seeks to expose the past wrongdoing and seek damages for that, but also that you're looking for an injunction to prevent the continued violation of the Fourth Amendment through various forms of domestic surveillance.
Yes, and that's the most important part of this lawsuit, is to bring it all to light and then make certain it cannot ever happen again.
Now, Rocky, for just a couple of minutes here, I'd like to shift and talk about whether or not you think you'll run for president under the Justice Party banner in 2016. I haven't heard one way or the other.
Well, I'd have to clone myself to do what I'm doing now, since I've reactivated my bar license and run for president as well. I actually very much support Bernie Sanders. I'm thrilled that he's in this race. I think he's going to be such an important element and raising issues that certainly Hillary Clinton never would have touched.
Mm-hmm.
She's been such a sellout to Wall Street, to the military-industrial complex, to the pharmaceutical and insurance industries. We're just going to see more of the same, I think.
And Rocky,
it's going to get worse. And she's and having somebody supposedly a Democrat like Hillary Clinton in the White House will mean the evisceration of the Democratic Party as an opposition party.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to have to fall in line with her, just like they've fallen in line with Barack Obama.
Well, Rocky, first of all, I take it as a probably not in terms of your own running. And I understand that because of the way the two parties dominate the presidential electoral process. The best you could do is hope to raise some issues and motivate some people for future campaigns or elections. As to Bernie Sanders, I fully agree with you on domestic issues, but I'm concerned particularly his kind of Me Too approach to the war against ISIS, to the plight of the Palestinians. There are a lot of foreign policy issues that I'm not comfortable with Bernie Sanders on.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
But we don't have – there is no other candidate who has better positions, unfortunately. And so I think we have to work with what we have. And, you know, in a best case, Sanders would win, and we could try to persuade him to go deeper and really, you know, go beyond the kind of reflexive democratic politics that he has embraced regarding foreign policy.
Yeah, I mean, the Democratic Party as a whole has pandered so much to the Israeli lobby in this country, AIPAC, for mm-hmm. instance. It really is shameful, and Hillary Clinton has been one of the worst, and she'd continue to be if she were in office. So what I was going to say about Bernie Sanders earlier is I don't expect he's going to win the primary. I mean, maybe something beautiful is going to happen, and he's going to beat Hillary Clinton. But if he doesn't, I hope that we'll have independent or third-party candidates lined up, because I think providing that opposing voice and getting out there and helping change the tenor of the discussion, and also one would hope finally getting in the presidential debates, because we know that that's been monopolized by the Democratic and Republican parties, and I think that we can make a huge difference in opening up those debates, and particularly if the Libertarian and the Green parties continue to pursue what they've promised, and that is a lawsuit, an antitrust suit, against the Commission on Presidential Debates and the Republican Democratic parties. Mm-hmm. I was working with them on that for a while, but I just didn't see the progress in terms of building up the necessary funds for a lengthy, very complex battle. But I hope they pull it off, because it's really important that we have those voices and let people see that there really is an option other than this political duopoly of the Republican and Democratic parties.
Well, and as to the debates, I fully agree. We saw with the way Fox so-called managed the huge field of Republicans by essentially creating, you know, this kind of phony criteria of who gets invited and who doesn't. And by extension, they play fast and loose with the so-called fringe candidates or third-party candidates. Even when, you know, in past elections, for example, when they allowed Mike Gravel or Dennis Kucinich on the stage, they did it for the purpose of ridiculing them. They had to ask Kucinich about an event with Shirley MacLaine, and they brought out a bankruptcy that Mike Gravel had because he was really challenging the conventional wisdom of the Democratic Party. And the way the networks now have free rein to manage these debates, because they run them on their cable channels where there's no FCC regulation whatsoever, whereas if they put them on Fox's over-the-air television stations or on the CBS television network, for example, they would have to abide by the Communications Act of 1934. And so the corporate media in this country is part of the problem in stifling debate and the voices of people who have alternative viewpoints.
No question about it. And they've done it in conjunction with the Republican Democratic parties. They'll abide by whatever rules come out of those two parties, and the Commission on Presidential Debates is simply a subsidiary monopoly that was created by the Republican and Democratic parties.
Well, and what do you think if Trump just buys that commission and runs it kind of like he did the Miss USA pageant, huh?
Well, at least we'd see more entertaining debates, I think.
What is your reaction to the Trump circus so far, Rocky?
Actually, he's my preference for Republican candidate.
I got
because
it.
They go down in flames, I'm sure. He's been foolish. He's shown himself to be a bigot. I think that a lot of people see him as refreshing because he's so full of bluster, but I think he's an embarrassment. And the issues that we're facing in this country deserve serious discussion, and this is a time when people are paying attention, and I hope we get back to a serious discussion of the kinds of issues that impact all of us every single day of our lives.
Rocky Anderson, thanks for joining me today, and please keep us posted on your class action lawsuit. We'll be happy to cover it as it proceeds into the courts.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you, Peter.
Well, in case you haven't heard, I want my goddamn Fourth Amendment back, and Rocky Anderson is working on it. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.